Ba-da-da-da-dum. 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 Hello, and welcome to the Comic-Cast, Ireland's number one comic podcast. I'm Craig.
I'm Liam.
We have to do that theme tune because the Imro thing.
Yeah.
We can't be playing any music. How are things?
Things are good.
Things are not good. Things are in fucking disarray. No music in any podcasts or blogs. Jerry Ryan is dead, sir. He's dead. This is fucking... There's a volcano in Iceland. This is the apocalypse. It has happened.
Yeah.
These things always come in trees, you know? That's how you know it's the apocalypse. Imro, Jerry Ryan, volcano. We're done.
It sounds like something Nicolas Cage might tell me in a bad movie.
You keep saying no one's bad, but everyone tells me it's good. I've heard lots of good things about it.
I don't know. All I know is that just before we came up here, I seen the Cocoon was on TV, and Brian Dennehy's in it, and it looks fucking awesome. What are we doing?
Brian, I was recently enough. I was rewatching a classic TV movie, *To Catch a Killer*, starring Brian Dennehy as Wayne Gacy, the killer clown. Never has a man been perfectly cast as Wayne Gacy more than fucking Brian Dennehy. But we're off topic.
We are off topic.
How's your voice? Everyone's been following you on Twitter. Knows that you can't really talk that well. But
yeah,
it seems to have come back.
It has come back. As I was telling you earlier, I still can't do my Mickey Mouse impression.
Okay, yeah, that's a sore loss.
Literally talking too much. Yeah. Everyone's been saying, how'd you lose your voice? That's such a weird thing to happen. It was quite literally had a very long conversation and just kind of seized up after.
Awesome.
Crazy.
You do talk too much. So. It was a nice peaceful
few
days.
And that's a trend that's not going to end right now. As we kick into our awesome show.
Yeah,
we've got loads of stuff lined up.
Yeah, yeah. We've got tons of comics to review. Non-Irish comics, then Irish comics. Then we're going to talk about the sequel everyone's been waiting for. It's come out this month, 2 years ago. The previous version of this movie came out. No one knew what to expect. People were expecting it was going to be awful. But then Sex and the City, the movie, came out, and it was magnificent. So we're going to talk about Sex and the City 2. No, we're going to talk about Iron Man 2. And, you know, we got some news. There's a lot of happening in Ireland in the coming weeks and months.
There sure is.
And then we'll have, you know, that'll be the end of the podcast. So let's just go straight into it.
Okay.
What have you been reading, Liam?
Well, what haven't I been reading? But I'll tell you what I have been reading.
That's all I asked.
Well, it's been a long wait, but Wilson by Daniel Klaus is finally out. And this is the first comic by Daniel Klaus in,
Years, I'd say.
Is it?
Anyway,
yeah, 5 years. What was it?
Ice Iron was the last one.
Oh, that was, yeah, that was.
It's also the first one that didn't come out in, like, 8-Ball originally and that was then collected later.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. You made an interesting point because the interesting thing about this is that apparently Daniel Klaus doesn't like the term graphic novel.
Yeah.
Although on the back of this new book, Wilson, it says, you know, Daniel Klaus's
new graphic novel.
Yeah. But it's just interesting in the fact that it really is his first graphic novel because it hasn't appeared in any of the comic books before. But what is Wilson about? Wilson is about a kind of middle-aged loser.
Familiar stuff.
Kind of gets into all sorts of escapades along the way. What did I like about this book? It's kind of like a big kind of annual, you know, when you were small and you used to get the Beano and the Dandy. It's in a big kind of like annual format, which I loved. I really thought was great. And even the pages are really thick, much thicker than like, you know, usual. So it really feels like it's a big fucking book for kids.
Yeah, yeah.
But it works in a kind of one page format. Like there's just like a, you know, page that has a title, and then the panels work up their way to a kind of, I don't want to say a gag at the end, but that's pretty
a point. Like a yes.
Well, they kind of like, I mean, like it's almost like he's taking the piss a little bit because you know, they do kind of the structure of each page is built up so that it is working towards a gag in inverted commas.
Yeah.
But then usually he'll just like swear or, you know, or shout at somebody. So the art in Wilson is it's weird because as I was saying, they're different or one page kind of structured book, but not each page, but a lot of pages are kind of greatly different. As you kind of probably seen in Icehaven, you know, sometimes they're you know, kind of realistic depictions of people and that, but sometimes they're complete caricatures, you know, complete cartoons. Where, you know, you'll go from like a full color page of realistic drawings to kind of a tinted just blue, shades of blue of on a really kind of cartoony or comic strip type persona, which is, I don't see any kind of, I don't see any benefit to it in terms of story, in terms of driving story. Maybe there isn't. I'm presuming there isn't.
Yeah.
But I've read a few reviews where people were talking about this and kind of wondering, did it help the story? And presumably it doesn't. It's just interesting to, it's just his style, you know? It's just interesting to see it like that. It's also a breeze to read.
Yeah.
It's,
mainly because of the thick pages. And the
yeah, well, also because of the format. But like compared to like some other of his books, like
Velvet Gloves, isn't it?
Cast in. Oh, I can't believe we can't. Even though it's there on my shelf.
Somewhere. Yeah, yeah. You know, we know. Yeah. Everyone knows the one.
Yeah, the difficult Klaus book.
Yeah.
But this is like, this is great. I mean,
okay.
I really enjoyed it, but also at the same time, unlike some other Klaus works, I didn't kind of go like, this is a masterpiece.
Was it worth 5 years? Wait, you think 5 years of work has gone?
It was, but yeah, and that's another downer, was because you read it so quickly, you're kind of like, oh shit, it's going to be another fucking 10 years before something comes out.
Right. Yeah. And now I want you to compare the character Wilson and the book Wilson to the character John Gazebo from the comic Gazebo, written by Liam Garrity.
Amazing. There are similarities. I'm glad Gazebo came out before Wilson.
Yeah. People, because I've seen many reviews of Wilson, and people are like, "Yeah, it's a bit like Gazebo."
Excellent. Yes. Well, there's no doubt in my mind that the entire thing is a copy.
Excellent.
But yeah, definitely like pick this up. You know, you'd be crazy not to.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you already have. It's beautifully designed as well.
It's a John Quarterly staple. Well designed. Hardcover books. Something I enjoy about them.
Yeah, so pick it up.
Cool. All right. I'm going to move on to my comic.
Yeah, what you've been reading, sorry.
Chew, which is a comic written by John Layman and art by Rob Guillory? I'm not sure. Guillory, probably. I probably don't know how to pronounce it. This is an awesome comic. I'm going to just show my balls up there and present them to y'all. It's about this dude... John Chu, I think is, or Tony Chu, not John Chu. John Gazebo, Tony Chu, and he's got this special power thing where when he eats anything, he can see the history of all the food he has eaten. So, you know, the example is given on the first page. He eats an apple.
Where do you find these comics?
So he eats an apple, and he knows like what tree it grew on, when it was picked, what pesticides were used on it. And you might think that's a fairly useless power, but this is set in a world where bird flu is rampant, so all chicken has been outlawed, so there's lots of sort of speakeasies where people sell chicken, so he often needs to find where the chicken has been grown, or where the chicken has been grown. Yeah, grown's the right word. And sometimes, so he has to go eat the chicken. Unfortunately, because of his power, eating meat's awful because he sees sort of how the animal is brutally killed, so he doesn't really like eating meat. But so him and his partner are out taking out these chicken speakeasies. One of the guys who, in the first issue, basically the guy who's cooked, the chef, cuts himself and bleeds onto the chicken. And so John or Tony Chu is eating the chicken, and he not only gets the memories of the chicken, but of this guy who of the chef. And it turns out that he's a serial killer who's, you know, taken out some girls or whatever, you know, and killed them. So Tony Chu goes to confront this guy, and he's like, "Oh, tell me where the girls are." He's like, "No, I'll never tell you. You'll never take me alive, copper." And he slits his throat. So Tony has to start eating your man to get more of his memories to find out where the girls are. You don't look sold. This is the greatest comic ever written, sir.
Usually what happens is you come in with a comic that has a ridiculous premise, and I love it because it's so ridiculous. But I don't know. You're taking a biscuit.
This is brilliant. Honestly, I realize I may not have done this justice, but and this is all just in the first issue, so. I don't want to spoil too much, but if I haven't spoiled enough already, he eats people's faces. But he gets assigned to some special task force where, you know, he's just going to have to use his powers more than just taking out chickens. And he's got this, there's another guy who's this huge guy who uses, what are Raphael's weapons from the Turtles? You know, the kind of forky...
Nunchucks?
No, that's Michelangelo, you douche. You know, the ones that kind of like
forks. There's like a difference between them.
Cause. Yeah. Well, I mean, this guy's huge and he just takes down bitches like it's nobody's business. So him and Tony, you know, they're partners now and have to go take down crime. So sometimes his boss will come with like a finger and tell him he needs to, you know, lick on a finger a bit to find out information. It's brilliant. It's just a if you haven't gotten this already, it's like a sort of black comedy type comic, but it's got some kind of creepy bits in it as well. And the art's really really cartoony and awesome, and it's just a really original idea, like actually original, which is a rarity. I've only read the first five issues. There's a big yet obvious twist in at the end of issue five, and I'm just dying to get my hands on more issues. I think there's only 10 or so out now. Okay. Add them in. But yeah, Chew, it's amazing.
There's a published by.
It is as all my comics I should be reviewing today. It's an Image comic.
Oh, excellent.
Written in the back of this thing, the writer's like, he saw Robert Kirkman's thing about everyone should do independent comics and that season, and so he's like, I'm gonna stop doing all my superhero work and start just writing this crazy idea I had. I've never heard of him, so I don't know how much superhero work he was doing exactly.
Maybe it was a good career move for him, exactly. And it just kind of, you know, worked out well.
He was writing She-Hulk or something, you know. Yeah, so Chew, check it out. Honestly, it's brilliant. Okay. Even if you're a cynic like Liam.
Okay.
What else have you been reading?
Well, I think we've both been reading Black Blizzard.
Oh, we have both been reading
by
Black Blizzard.
Yoshihiro Tatsumi.
Oh, fucking a regular. I'd say we've reviewed more books by this guy than anyone else on the podcast.
Yeah, even despite the fact that he only has like five books in print. But as regular listeners to this show will know, he's like a favorite.
He's a master of the crafts.
Yeah, absolutely. One of one of my top guys.
So, what? Well, tell me about Black Blizzard. What's it about?
So it's about Susumu, who's a young pianist who's arrested for murder, and he's handcuffed to an older criminal, and then he's put on a train, they're going back to the station, but then an avalanche happens, and he's unwittingly on the lam, because this other guy who's handcuffed to, you know, wants to escape.
Yes.
And then the police are after them. That's pretty much...
Yeah, it's kind of a fairly cliched kind of guys on a run story. What did you think of it?
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, I enjoyed it. First of all, the art.
Oh, yes.
Right? The art is second to none.
I agree.
Like, it's a style I really like. It feels a little bit more looser, perhaps, than in A Drifting Life and some of the stories from, like, The Pushman.
Yeah.
But apparently, reading in an interview, that's kind of what he was going for.
Okay. he did it really fast as well, didn't he?
Exactly. Like, so, sorry, it's probably, worth mentioning that, you know, so far, you know, we've seen short stories or short comics by him. Then we've seen a mammoth autobiography comic by him, but this is the first
graphic novel,
I guess, by him.
Yeah.
It's about like 150 pages.
And it's also much older than all the other stuff that's been released. Like, this came out in the 50s or something.
That's right. 1956.
Compared to 1970 and stuff
for the other books. Maybe. So, the art, you can't go wrong with the art. An interesting thing about it is that there's like some color pages.
Yeah, the start.
And at the start, which are great.
Yeah, yeah, really.
Because it's great to see like, a few color pages.
Yeah, like I said, the art's good. His faces in particular are. The main thing is just brilliant at expressions, and there's loads of bits in here, especially near the end where basically because the guys are handcuffed together, they're deciding how they're going to escape, and there's lots of scenes where they're just trying to decide someone's going to have to lose an arm because they can't go anyways, and so these sections are almost dialogue free and just the tension on their faces and stuff is magnificent. Absolutely. I didn't like it that much though.
Okay.
Overall, I thought it was a bit cliched. Like I said, the art's good. There's that one scene near the end where they put sleeping powder in each other's drinks and are in one drink.
Yes.
And turn their backs and the other guy swaps the drinks. So no, neither of them knows which one has the sleeping powder in, and they both drink back the drinks and there's just pages of them just when they're like, who's been affected by it.
It's very tense.
Most tense thing ever. But then, without spoiling too much, like, everything is wrapped up in the stupidest fucking package. kid. Like, every character in this book that you've seen up to this point is related, like, really, is really closely related. It's just...
Well, I kind of agree with you in that it's very of its time.
Yeah.
I think, you know, reading it, I really kind of thought of a lot of Alfred Hitchcock films from that time, and also Fritz Lang.
Yeah.
Those kind of, you know, those kind of thrillers from that time. And even actually in the kind of style, in terms of like when they're, you know, being chased and there's really long shadows being cast in the walls, even visually, it kind of looks the same. But story-wise, it is kind of... Yeah, like when I did enjoy it, but I do remember the word popping up into my mind just as I'd finished it was, you know, that was charming.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, you know, it is from 1956.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess even by those standards, it probably is, as you say, a little bit cliche.
It's still very. Oh, no, it's still a reason.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's very atmospheric, but it's still like very, you know, like a melodrama.
Yeah.
You know, at times.
Yes.
But yeah, overall, I think it's definitely worth, I think, picking up if you enjoyed.
His
other stuff. Like, interesting, if you've read A Drifting Life, you'll already have kind of read about the making of this comic, because he writes about it in it. Interestingly, there's an interview at the back. We should say that these are, like, obviously this is a continuing kind of series where Drawn and Quarterly are, you know, kind of rescuing, reprinting his work, which had never appeared in English. And the series editor is Adrian Tomini, who kind of interviews him at the end of every book about the book specifically. And there's quite a short but yet very interesting interview about this particular book, which I think is quite telling that, you know, Tomini kind of asks him what he thinks of the book, and he says like, I feel shame.
Yeah.
You know, that this is, you know, kind of like looking back at something going, oh, you know.
It's a bit rubbish.
Yeah. But I love the volume. I mean, you just can't go wrong. As you said, Wilson, you can't really go wrong with Drawn and Quarterly.
They do bring out nice tomes.
Mm.
Black Lizard, Yoshiro Tatsumi. Pick it up. Maybe. do you want me to go again?
Yeah, yes.
All right. So the other comic I've been reading, when I read Shoe this month, I was like, oh, I'm not going to top this. Like, I'm really not. This is the best comic I'm going to read this month. But I was wrong. The best comic I read this month is called The Sword, and it's by the Lunar Brothers. Joshua Luna and something else Luna that starts with a J. One of them writes, one of them draws.
Luna as in
Luna,
like Luna from like Bear in the Big Blue House.
Yes, exactly like Luna from Bear in the Big Blue House, except they're people. They create comics. Other stuff they've written is, I haven't read it, but Girls, I think, is the one where I'm not really sure, but these alien girls come and kill everyone in a town or something. It's meant to be good. I've always wanted to read it, but I never have. So I picked up this, liking the art from Girls That I've Seen. I was like, oh, this might be good. So it's about, it starts off and it's just about this sort of regular middle-class dude. And he's got a daughter and she's in a wheelchair. He's got another daughter. She's not in a wheelchair. She's grand. And, you know, his wife and it, they're all sort of just regular and just getting on with their business. And but, you know, you kind of introduce them all. They all seem fairly nice people. And then these three undesirables, these three mysterious strangers burst into their house late at night. And they start, they grab her dad, the dad of the family, and they're like, oh, they call him Demetrios. And they're like, oh, Demetrios, tell us where the sword is. You know, you've stolen it from us. You know, you've been running around from us. We found you. Tell us where it is or we're going to kill your family. And he's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. And so one of them, they just sort of rip apart his daughter, the non-wheelchair bound one. Just rip her apart in front of him, like really violently. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know. And so then they kill his wife. And then they're like, oh, we're going to torture you now. So they start like electrocuting him. And then he dies like straight away. And they're like, oh, balls. So then we're just left with, I can't remember her name, the main character, Dara. She's in the wheelchair chick, and she the ground, she falls through the house basically, and under the house there is a sword, and she picks this up and it gives her superpowers. So now she can walk but can also jump over buildings, and the sword sort of cuts through people like a worm knife through butterwood. So then she's, so the only thing, it turns out, the only thing these guys are really afraid of is the sword. Okay. So they kind of run away and they're trying to regroup and figure out how to get the sword back. And you know, like I said, I'm about to say this is all fairly cliche stuff. Girl gets superpowers, fighting guys. But it's just A, it's drawn really well, and B, it's really well written. The character Dara is phenomenal. One of the best female characters has been written in comics in a long time, I think. Basically, I mean, story-wise, now she has a sword, she's a stout, she's like, I'm gonna kill these dudes for killing my family. So it's not, you know, there's nothing crazy there, but cool stuff like she gets taken in by the FBI and they, you know, what happens if they take the sword and get that power, you know. Turns out they go crazy and start killing people as well and shit. And it's really cool. The art is weird. It's good. It's really plain. I can't think of a good word to describe. Really boring and plain. But then shit gets real and violent. And it's, you know, the sort of plain, boring art, when you're watching those people's heads get ripped off and ripped apart, it even makes it more more gruesome and more awesome. So I've only read the first 12 issues. This is last night, and I'm like, I need to read like 4 issues of this so I can review it. But I ended up just reading 12, and I'm like, it's really late. I really want to keep reading. Like, I was just completely hooked. And then there's all these cool fight scenes. She basically fights those three guys every 6 issues, so it looks like she's going to take down one of them. And they all have power over different elements. Mm. So the first one she fights is he's got the control over water, and she fights him at a beach and stupidly lets him near the sea. So he's just like fucking shooting, you know, water at her everywhere. And it's reminding me a lot of, I don't know if you've read or seen X. It's an anime by Clamp. It's the only good anime slash manga Clamp have released. It's very much like that, in that it's a guy with sword fighting people with elemental powers. I think this is it's hard to explain, I think, maybe, because it is really cliched, but it's just so well written that it kind of overcomes the story that, you know, it's a story I've read 100 times before, but just it's so well written, and the main character's so interesting, and the art is so good that it just all comes together, and it's great. I really recommend, like, highly recommend picking up. It's like the last issue ever is coming out in 2 weeks or something, so, you know, go pick them all up and you can just read a whole epic in 24 issues. Well, actually, I can't actually say that the last 12 issues are any good, because I haven't read them, but the first 12 are brilliant. I'm looking forward to reading the last 12 as soon as I get out of this den of a comic gas recording studio. Yeah, so pick it up. So Irish comics, I guess, is our next segue.
Three Irish comics.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to do first? Weirdly, they're all issue 2, which is a bit weird.
Yeah.
You want to do Reroll first?
Let's do Reroll first, yeah.
So, as I said, this is issue 2 of an Irish language comic called Reroll.
We reviewed the first issue and loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what did you think?
More of the same. You know. It's awesome. I guess, who's in it? Phil Barrett, Bob Byrne, there's a lot of talent in here. Sorry, I'm forgetting everyone, and I cannot find any names on the thing.
Well,
Nolan.
There's lots. Stephen Downey, there's lots of people.
Exactly.
In
there. All really talented people, and here for maybe the first time, mostly full color comics by these guys. Well, not first time, because maybe Roy should won. Again, I don't understand what's going on, so I kind of have to make up my own stories in these comics. My Irish is very poor.
We have to say, like the point of this comic is obviously it's aimed at kids.
Yeah.
You know, who are learning Irish.
Yes.
And if I were a kid learning Irish, I would love this.
Absolutely.
I think we've said before. It's got a short kind of dictionary at the back that has kind of translations of more difficult. Yeah. Irish words.
I mean, it's reminiscent of those shitty fucking annuals you used to get. You know, what are those things called? And they'd also have sort of games in them and stuff when you're in school. Do you remember you get them at Christmas? Or kind of little books that would have stories in them in Irish. And like crosswords in Irish and stuff.
Yeah,
and it was an attempt to get kids, you know, to make Christmas Irish, to make Irish fun. And it was shit. But, you know, but if you're getting, if you're a child and you're getting some like crazy Bob Byrne story about, you know, an octopus, you know, that's 100 times more interesting than fucking Robin Redbreast. Well, whatever bullshit they were feeding us.
Well, I think the great concept here is that the fact is, as well as, like, you know, the kids love comics.
Yeah.
Is that when you read the stories, you can kind of get a sense of you know what they're saying by visually seeing what they're doing or you know what they might be saying, and you know, obviously, like, not guesswork, but that would kind of help
itself
to actually learning Irish. So in that respect, it's great. There's kind of, like, as you're saying, there's like an array of comic styles in here from some very different people. Bob Byrne is clearly relishing the opportunity to do this kind of comic. Like, you can really see, like, Bob Byrne being, you know, writing, like, the Beano or the Danny. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But, yeah, and, like, as does Alan Nolan of Sancho fame. Mm. And, you know, Philip Barrett, as I said, is in there. There is what I presume is an excerpt from Mike Lynch and Sean Cullen's comic about Ireland's first superhero.
Oh, yes.
Which I seen, like, an interview with them on Nationwide.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, where they were talking about this kind of superhero that they'd come up with. And I can't... his name is probably here in Irish because I was looking for it and I can't find it, unfortunately. But just interestingly, I mean, we've seen some comics before about Irish superheroes.
Yeah.
We've reviewed some on the show that were kind of okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's a hard kind of thing to do. Absolutely. But this, just to say, because I presume this is just an excerpt from, you know, a bigger comic, is that it actually looks really great.
It does, actually.
The art does look pretty good. And I can't, like, it's I think it's about, like, a meteoroid hits this guy in the chest and he gets special powers from it.
Special meteor powers.
Yeah. You know, so from, you know, in that respect. Looks good. Yeah, it's great. Another thing I want to say about it, though, is there's great... the production again is fabulous. It's like the easily
one of the
best
nicest comics. Even if you went in and bought, it paid €7 for some new Marvel comic in Vin Bannon, it's fucking, it looks 100 times cheaper than this thing. Like, yeah, it's a really well put together book. The pages are awesome.
Full color
almost.
I think, I'm not sure if we said this before, but you know what would be great is, like, if they harnessed it, like, this is great, you know, as it is for kids and that, but it'd be great if, you know, someone managed to pull together a comic like this for adults with this kind of production value. And in fact, I was talking to the editor of this comic, Aidan Courtney, and he kind of said maybe down the line they might, you know, try something for adults, which would be great.
Yeah.
Which would be great. Like, you know,
it's a super idea.
Yeah. So this is available in shops around the country. If you look, we'll link it up, but it's comicagwael.ie.
Yeah.
They also have a Facebook which lists all the, there's quite a good deal of shops around the country. Not just comic books, or comic book shops.
Yeah.
That are selling it. Yeah, it's $2.50. It's like, definitely pick it up. You'd be an idiot not to.
Yeah, I agree. What are we reviewing next?
Last Bus, issue two.
Again, sorry to keep bringing this up, but, I believe when Last Bus, Last Bus issue 1 came out, a certain comic called Gazebo issue 1 also came out around the same time. So where is Gazebo issue 2, Liam? When is the continued adventures of John Gazebo?
It's in the pipeline.
Yeah, it's in the pipeline.
Ask Phil.
How close to the pipeline? Ask Phil, have you even finished the script?
No.
So I'm asking you.
Yeah, that's interesting. Once I seen Last Bus was coming out, I was like, damn.
Yeah,
that means, you know,
John Gazebo needs to strike again.
You need to say, yeah, we always follow Last Bus.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the way it's always worked, the one time it happened before. Anyway, Last Bus, issue 2.
Yeah.
It launched last week in the Bernard Shaw. I went down to the launch to kind of go, hello, congratulations. you read it.
I did.
What did you think?
I thought it was brilliant. I guess basically, I don't, you know, we definitely don't want to spoil too much because it's a fairly short comic, but it's about a dude and his daughter's come live with him with her two kids, and he's kind of a grumpy old sod, but also, you know, lovable. and I that's really it. You know, I don't want
to. Yeah, I guess it, like, this is, you know, she's obviously had some sort of fight with her husband.
Yeah,
who's always away on business. Hmm. You know, and the dad is not, or the granddad is not used to having the kids around. That's the kind of main story comic. Then there's also one.
There's some good ones.
There's one called Nothing to Fear about climate change.
Yes,
what did you make of that?
It worried me. I was like, oh no, climate change. This is another reminder of our terrible ways and our destroying the environment. And I thought it was good. I thought it was really interesting.
I thought it was really interesting as well because it changed what is kind of like, is what a lot of people kind of think of as just kind of a political issue into a real fear. Which is interesting. It's basically about a guy, you know, who kind of, you know, like, actually is terrified that climate change, you know, global warming, etc. is happening. He's actually afraid, as one might be afraid of a spider or something like that. I thought it was really good. I really liked it.
There's also, what else is there? There's like a robot.
There's Paddy and the Giant
that was
Robot.
Brilliant.
which is a one-page funny about Patty and a giant robot, which I've seen before. It's I think there's a collection of them.
Okay.
And I've seen one before. It's brilliant. Yeah, yeah. It's really funny.
It's super good.
Then at the back, there's some kind of funny pages.
Oh, just about conventions.
Just about comic book conventions, which are fantastically observed.
Yeah, yeah.
And really funny as well. Yeah, the art. The art. Yeah. The art is superb.
There was a couple of panels in particular. Not to, like, it's all good. But that was just really Irish. That just really captured, like, the Irish essence. There was one of an exterior of a house and one of the inside of the kitchen that just blew me away. I'm not sure why, but I just remember thinking these are just brilliantly drawn things. But, like, the whole comic is brilliantly drawn. Yeah, it is.
He has a genuinely interesting visual style. Yeah, like, it is really unique.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, specific to him and really it's a pleasure to put your eyes on it.
Yeah,
really is. And also, you know, Patty is does graphic design also, and that also shows through in the design of this book and the making of this book, especially the kind of the cover and the insides are really beautifully put together. I love the colors at the front, the pink and blue. So like, this is number two. It's definitely better than number one.
Yeah,
number one was great, but I think a great thing to see in a comic is that someone is improving or growing or, you know, changing and, you know, just becoming better. And this is great. Yeah, I mean, we've said it before, is that Patty Lynch is definitely up there, the very top three, I would have said, independent Irish comics people.
Easily.
Yeah, so I mean, go and pick it up. It's €3.
It's in for Implanet and Subsidy.
I presume it is. Yes, you know.
You can also probably buy it on CarverPress.com.
But yeah,
there is only one thing I want to bring up. Negative.
Negative.
Where's the bus?
Where's the bus?
I bought this expecting some buses. Not to be found. Maybe it's some sort of metaphorical bus. I'm just kidding. No, definitely pick this up. It's super awesome. Okay.
Excellent.
Our final Irish comic of the month.
Yes. The Wren.
I haven't read this one.
Issue 2.
Tell me about it. I'll have read about half of it while you went to get some tea.
Well, this is one of those comics, where I go into Forbidden Planet. And the Irish section, kind of, you know, every month they'll usually have at least one new kind of Irish comic that I'll pick up that I haven't heard of or I don't know any of the people involved. Because, you know, it's a small knit community.
Yeah.
You know, but so this is basically a superhero comic set in Ireland, as we were kind of talking about earlier on. And it's about a guy called the Wren.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing here is I've never seen issue one. I've never heard of issue one.
Yeah.
So this kind of throws you right in. It's been drawn by Jason Connolly. Script is by Mark Kerwin. And the lettering is by Phil Rowe.
Did you get that guy's last name wrong? I think it's Connor, not Connolly.
Oh, was it Connor?
Yeah,
I did. Sorry, apologies.
Sorry, just the...
Jason Connors. Yes, Connor. Sorry.
Yeah, so tell me about the Wren. Sorry, I've only read about half of it.
Yeah, I mean, thrown in on issue two, it's kind of weird. You know, it's about this kid who's called Jack McCormick, you know, and
he's got the secret identity.
He's got a grandfather who's a doctor. And I've really missed out on the first setup, issue, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on.
You felt a little lost.
This is kind of, it's called Awakening, this story. First time for everything.
Yeah.
And it starts off with a big kind of fight between some sort of ogre in what looks to be kind of the Christchurch area.
Yeah. Keep giving us a page by page blow here, Lee.
I'm just leaping through. It's weird. I don't know. I do have this weird thing about Irish comics superheroes.
Yeah.
I mean, and why they don't work usually is because we're like too small a country. We're like the reason people write stories about America and that is because they do have these huge corporations. They do have the FBI.
Yeah.
You know, we have the guards. You know?
Sometimes.
Sometimes we have the guards. We don't have like huge scientific labs.
Yeah.
You know? So it's kind of, I don't know, yeah, it's just, it's maybe it's just my own fault for not being able to get over the fact that, you know, there doesn't seem to be any apparent danger in Ireland that we need several superheroes. And there are several superheroes, because what the gist I get here is that, you know, he's got his superhero powers, I don't know how, you know, he's now the Wren, he's now joined a bunch of other superheroes.
Okay. what is the Wren superpower?
I don't know. He can fly. In this one, he kind of discovers that he can fly. He's kind of fallen over, and he thinks someone has caught him, another superhero.
Yeah.
And he's like, thanks for catching me. And he's like, I didn't catch you. and he discovers he can fly.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so, and another thing about superhero comics, I know I'm not really talking specifically about the Wren, but the problem is with them is that because there are always going to be these types of ones are independent, so those are going to be pretty short as well.
Yeah.
And so I think for like something like a superhero thing, in my view anyway, you need a longer platform, you know, to be doing this. It's kind of annoying to think that, like, you know, an issue 3, maybe I'm wrong, but an issue 3 of this mightn't come out for another year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's going to be hard to get into things. That said, the art in this is quite nice.
Yeah, I like
it. You know what I mean? It's quite good. It's much better than, you know, like other stuff.
The majority of rubbish we get.
Yeah, the most. I guess you'd kind of have to be into it, really. I wasn't really sucked in by it entirely, but you know, I'm not a huge superhero fan. That's really true. You should have read this.
Yeah, you should have given it to me the other day when you gave me every other comic to read.
But it's nicely put together.
Yeah, it's only €2, apparently.
Yes, you can pick it up in Forbidden Planet. You know,
check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
If you're so inclined.
Yes.
Cool. All right. Now, time to get on to the movie news. We've seen Iron Man 2. let's talk about it.
Iron Man 2.
Yeah, what do you think about Iron Man 2?
Well, in a nutshell, when I came out of the cinema, I was like, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
That is my kind of basic kind of thing. You know, you will go, you go and see it and you will enjoy it.
Yeah.
But now let's cut the crap. Let's break it down and talk about the things we didn't like.
Yeah. Well, just my overall opinion as well. When I was watching it, I was like, oh, this is really good. And I was like, this is probably better than the first one even, especially near the end, because the end of the first one is pretty poor. And I was like, oh, he's finding loads of robots and... Oh, sorry, spoilers. I'm going to spoil this one.
Yeah, we are going to spoil this one.
Yeah, I'm kind of sure most people have seen it and are looking for a post coverage after they've seen it, you know what I mean? A sort of discussion about the movie.
If I can make a brief point, it's really annoying trying to review something that you're not that you can't spoil because how can you fully review it? We'd just be like a press release.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to this is going to be a full discussion about the movie.
Yeah, so skip on about whatever.
Yeah, well, doesn't the news you can find on the internet. You're done. So yeah, when I was watching, I was like, yeah, I'm really enjoying this. I think it might be better in person. And then as it came out and sort of days after, it's kind of, I've kind of liked it less and less. But I still think it was great. I don't think it was just good. I think it was great.
Okay.
But I don't know. It's sort of also just, I don't know. It's hard to explain. But
I think I can articulate it for you, because I felt like that with the first one, as you said earlier, that no one knew what to expect with Iron Man 1.
I think they didn't know what to expect, and they're expecting fucking rubbish.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. So when everyone went and seen it and came out, it was like, wow, that was way brilliant.
Better. Yeah, yeah.
So we kind of knew it was going to be good.
Yeah.
But, you know, so like it kind of had a little bit more to live up to. Absolutely, now that, now that we knew what they could do with the character.
Yeah.
But I
think it's a really interesting way of doing a superhero movie, in that like Iron Man isn't in it that much. Like
there's the
racing scene at the start.
Yes.
And that's not even at the start, it's about half an hour in, really. It's the first time he's in the Iron Man suit. And then he's not in at all for the second act. And then him and Rhodey fight a little bit. And then there's the last scene, which of course there's a big fight at the end.
Yeah,
but that's it. Like other than that, it's really character based. It's very much more about the character Tony Stark.
Yeah, yeah.
The character Iron Man. Compare that to Spider Man, where she's swinging around every fucking 5 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's a very different way. I hate almost like an art house way of doing a superhero movie. If you know what I mean. Which I thought was very interesting. There's way too many characters in this movie, which I think hurts it a little bit.
Yes, you're kind of like, you want a little bit more out of everyone, but there's no time because there's too many of them.
Like, there's really, like, a lot of characters. Like, and like, they even brought in John Favreau playing Happy. Like, the game gave him more time, which was great. But like, he was really funny. He was kind of comic relief in the movie. But at the same time, I was like, I wish, like, Pepper Potts wasn't in it that much at all. I was like, I would have rather maybe more her than him. And I don't know why Scarlett Johansson was in it at all, really, except to set up an Avengers movie and to make me want to jerk off when I got Tony Stark obviously gets a lot of screen time. Don Cheadle's pretty good as James Rody, probably better than Terrence Howard. I don't like Terrence Howard, so that was very easy.
I actually enjoyed Don Cheadle a lot.
He was pretty good, and I was afraid he wouldn't be buff enough, but he was fine. That didn't bother me. Sam Rockwell's Justin Hammer is brilliant. Yeah, like, he was the best character in the movie.
Easily.
I wish he was Tony Stark.
Actually, that was like one of the great things about watching Sam Rockwell was like watching a man who wants to be Tony Stark but is, you know, clearly shit. But like, you know, so some of the stuff, you know, when he's doing his kind of big presentation at the expo, like, we've seen an awesome one by Tony Stark at the start of the film, but when he comes out and he's doing jokes and nobody's laughing, it's brilliant. Sam Rockwell is a legend.
Interestingly, I thought the opening scene, both opening scenes, the Mickey Rourke introduction where his dad's dying, I thought that was shit. Like, I was like, oh, this movie's poor. And then I also really, I thought the expo thing, like, fell flat in his face. I was like, Tony's really charismatic and stuff, but not in that scene he wasn't. It was like a poor Steve Jobs or something. I thought it really fell flat, and I was like, I didn't know what went wrong. Okay. I just thought that would really... So then when... Justin Hammer was worse, but that sort of part fell flat a little bit for me. But at the end of that scene, expo scene, I was like, oh, right, maybe this is going to be really bad. Mm. But after that, it did, like, ratchet up and was really good.
There's plenty of what made the first movie great, you know, the kind of witty dialogue between everyone.
I think Tony and Pepper's relationship was really interesting. Well done. That they're kind of like a married bickering couple, like, the whole time, and they're talking over each other, not really listening to each other, and it's played perfectly. More of it that they didn't get enough time together. The end was kind of weird. I thought it was good, but it still kind of fell flat. I don't know. He's fighting loads of robots. And...
It did, because I thought like Mickey Rourke as the villain.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I loved him that much as a villain because he was good, but he just he didn't seem that much of a threat.
This is it. This is the major problem with the Iron Man 2, which you're going to reveal right now. Justin Hammer and Mickey Rourke, they're the bad guys, but even if they're not likable, there's no urgency for Tony Stark to take them down at all.
Absolutely.
Like, there needs to be a scene where Mickey Rourke, like, shoots a kid or something. You know, like, that's all the movie needed.
Yeah, exactly.
And they even almost had it where they have a robot going to kill the child and Tony saves him or something. I'm not saying they should try to kill that child. Not necessarily a child, a cat or something. But just something that shows that this guy... Because he's just sort of hard done by. And, like, he's a little evil. He sent out some evil robots, but... Whatever.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is like that, like, you know, you see him kind of challenge Iron Man twice in the film, and both times it's almost like exactly the same fight. He, you know, he steps up, he's going to try and take down Iron Man, and then within a minute, Iron Man has, you know, fucking gotten away with him. Yeah. It's ridiculous. I thought, the movie does kind of have a bit of an anticlimax, because even though they had an awesome kind of huge end battle, but then that's before Mickey Rourke even arrives. Yes, he's the villain. And then when he arrives, I thought, oh, maybe they're going to push this way out, maybe they're going to have an even fucking better huge battle, but that doesn't happen. And then, you know, he just like wipes him out.
They literally just let's just shoot him.
That's exactly what happens,
and then he just falls down dead. That was kind of rubbish. The best, like, there's one burn scene in the movie where just after the... Well, there's many burn scenes. There's not just one. But my favourite scene is probably just after the car chase... Or the F1 racing thing. Mickey Rourke's in prison and Tony Stark comes in to see him, and they're just going out in no suits, not just sort of arguing each other, trying to figure each other out. And I thought it was brilliant. That was the best scene. Should be more of that. That was the only scene they had together, really. And then Mickey Rourke... spends the entire second act like not doing anything. He's just in a lab. I'm like, oh yeah, he's evil. Look at him, he's hacked through Justin Hammer's security. Like what the hell. So I don't know, but overall I think I don't know, we're sounding kind of negative, but I did really enjoy the movie.
Exactly, like you will enjoy this, or you will come out of it enjoying it, but you know, it could have been done a little bit. It definitely, you know, it definitely doesn't do any damage to the Iron Man brand.
It's not Spider-Man 3, right?
Soundtrack wise, because an interesting thing with the AC/DC,
it's just the soundtrack's out and it's just AC/DC, but there isn't just AC/DC music in it.
That's true, yeah. Because I know a lot of people have been telling me I'm not going to see it. It's just going to be full of AC/DC, and it's actually not.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my favorite things from the movie is when Iron Man and Don.
James Rhodey.
Yeah, when they're having their fight and they start playing Daft Punk's Robot Rock, inspired.
It's not even Robot Rock. It's like a mix of Robot Rock with like Another One Bites the Dust.
It is a mix. But that was inspired. That was really good. I was crying with laughter when that happened.
There is that scene where is it that one just before? I think it's just before he starts fighting him, where Tony is really drunk.
Yes.
And he's just getting people to throw plates and shoot shit out. Like, that was brilliant. I was like, oh no, don't do it. You're going to shoot someone in the face or something.
It was like, it was kind of interesting from the point of view of, I like the way they're kind of developing Tony Stark's alcoholism a little bit more, because it works, you know, it works as a character kind of trait.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, in the end of the movie, it doesn't end on the cliffhanger or anything, but there's plenty up in the air, for sequels. And I read something with Jon Favreau where he's saying he didn't know how to end it, because he didn't know if Iron Man 3 would be coming up for the Avengers movie or that kind of stuff, so he had to kind of leave everything open. I guess that's it.
After the credits.
That's what I'd say. After the credits. You haven't seen it.
Oh, no, I did, yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Why'd you ask me to tell you what it was?
Because as I was explaining to someone the other day, as we all know, I don't read that many superhero comics. I just didn't get it. I kind of, basically what happened is, there's all these little, after the credits, little scenes that kind of hint at something. I think what was the last one with Iron Man? It was the end of the Hulk.
In Iron Man 1, Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury, comes in and just says, I'm putting together a team or something like that. And then in the Hulk, Iron Man comes in and he's trying to get Hulk on the team, I think. Yeah.
So in this one of the agents has been sent to Mexico earlier on in the film, but we see he's arrived and there's been some sort of crash in the desert.
Huge crater. And Thor's hammer is in it, basically. And they give it a briefest shot. I don't know. Like if I didn't know, I knew going in what it was going to be, because I'd read on the internet.
Yeah.
But I think even if I didn't, even I might add trouble. I was like, what was that? Because they really just flashed it up for
because my problem was, I seen it and I was like, was that a sword?
Yeah.
And I was like, whose sword is that?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't get it. That's why I texted you saying, what happened?
I understand. It was a bit weird, but definitely interesting. I don't know if I guess this kind of might segue into news if we're done.
Sure.
With Iron Man, but they've released the first picture of Thor, the movie. Chris Hemsworth or whatever his name in the armor, and it's pretty much just a close up of him in the armor. It looks awesome. It looks really cool. It looks, because I'm a bit worried about Thor, because he's Thor. I've never read the Thor comic. He's very much like Iron Man. A little bit back to Iron Man. Interestingly, like Iron Man was like a B-list, C-list Marvel character, and I don't know why it happened. He was a big part in Civil War, and then the movie came out, and suddenly he's A-list. Like, everyone knows who Iron Man is now, and so his comics sell better. Like, he used to have... The Iron Man comic that was out before the one that's out now was shit. Like, and they just had... I don't know who was writing it, but it was shit. It was like... It didn't make any sense. It was so bad. But now, they've got A-list talent on Iron Man, so I think they're trying to do the same with Thor, where they're going to bring this movie out, and obviously Thor's a big character in comics now. But I just don't really like him that much. I don't know. It's hard to get into there's gods and stuff, and it doesn't really fit with Marvel Universe too well. They do a fairly good job in the comics, but I do think there's reason to worry about this. I don't think people... I definitely think there's a lot of ways this could go wrong, but this first picture, it looks great. His costume isn't too fucking... I don't know. It looks really cool. Look too... I don't know. Yeah. It looks really good. I'm really excited about the Thor movie now. I'm more excited now, just even after seeing that picture. And I'm excited that Kenneth Branagh is directing it, because I really like it. I even like the Sleuth. Yeah.
The remake?
Yes.
I haven't seen the remake, actually. Yeah,
it's...
Is it worth seeing?
No. Not really. But I still kind of liked it. I'm a big Kenneth Branagh fan. So Thor.
Okay, well... I have actually another documentary of a documentary.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Yes, this is...
Confessions of a Superhero.
Yeah, Confessions of a Superhero.
I tried to watch this, but my player wouldn't work. So,
so basically, this is... it's a documentary, which is out on DVD now.
Yeah.
And it's about those... You all see in kind of documentaries about Hollywood and the movies, all these characters from the movies on Hollywood Boulevard,
yeah,
kind of walking up and down, you know, outside, I think, is it the Chinese Theater? I think it is.
Yeah.
You know, but it's about four of those characters, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and the Hulk.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, the people and their lives. And I kind of, when I picked this up, you know, I was kind of like, oh, I'll pick this up, I'll review this for the show.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have any hopes because I hadn't heard anything about this at all. This came out of nowhere.
I've never heard
of it. But actually, this is an amazing documentary.
Really, yeah.
It's one of the best documentaries I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
So as I said, it focuses on these four people.
Yeah.
We've got Superman, the guy who kind of looks exactly, he's a dead ringer for Christopher Reeve.
Really?
Yeah, he really kind of maybe a little bit kind of skinnier, but you know, he's got the look.
He can walk.
Yeah, and he's like a Superman obsessive.
Yeah.
He shows him in his house and he's got everything Superman. And the great thing about him is, like, his job is, going up and down, having his photograph taken with people on Hollywood Boulevard, you know, tearing his living. Yet he says he's probably about like $1 million worth of Superman crap, you know, because he's got everything. He's got signed fucking, copies of scripts and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
There's him. And he also, the interesting thing about him is that he used to be like a crystal meth, like abuser, you know, before he did this. Yeah, it's crazy. Then we've got Wonder Woman, who's kind of like this small town American girl who, you know, one day she wasn't kind of fitting in the town, and her mother just said, you know, listen, do you want to go to LA? And she said, yes. And when do you want to go? Tomorrow. So her mother bought her a ticket and flew her to LA,
yeah,
where she's now a Wonder Woman, dresses up as Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's an aspiring actress.
I should say she must be an
aspiring actress. Yeah, yeah. You know, and then there's the Hulk, who seems to be the most grounded or human of the four.
Yeah.
He's kind of this guy who just wears the Hulk suit, you know, so you don't even get to see his face or anything when he's doing the thing. And he used to be this homeless guy. He was homeless for years, and he wants to be an actor, you know, but he seems very humble. And, you know, that's him. Then Batman. Now, Batman is the fucking, like, is unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's this guy who claims that he used to work for like all these kind of mafia bosses and stuff. And in a fantastic scene where he's dressed as Superman, clearly arranged for the documentary, but he goes to therapy. And so he goes to therapy dressed as Batman, and he confesses to his therapist that he's killed people and that he hasn't been caught for it. And his therapist is like, I've kind of simplified that a lot, but it takes a while for them to drag it out of him.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's you're kind of so clear in your head that he's lying just because he wants to be macho. It's phenomenal. He's also got an anger problem. He gets you couldn't write it. He's Batman. He's got an anger problem. So we go through these four kind of stories. They're kind of like intersplices, you know, their four kind of lives, because they're all, you know, working together.
Yeah.
On the side of it. A few interesting, you know, things learned from this documentary is those people who dress up as characters, they don't work for the Chinese theater.
Yeah.
They don't work in any kind of official capacity. They're street performers who work on tips, which I presume they were hired by.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah.
You know, because in quite a funny scene, you know, they go, your man's saying, yeah, we've got two Captain Sparrow from, you know, Pirate of the Caribbean.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got like a fucking brilliant scene where like this guy comes dressed as Ghost Rider and nobody knows who he is, so nobody wants their photograph taken with him.
Awesome.
But it's interesting to see them, you know, walking around saying hi to people, and you know, people get their photograph taken with them, and then they're kind of like, you know, and we work for tips.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and by law, they can't, you know, they can't charge. Force,
yeah.
Yeah, or charge anyone. So they have to kind of keep saying that they work for tips. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And like in a fantastic bit of this film, like Batman, who has an anger problem, you remember, just start harassing kind of people and it gets very ugly and he's arrested. And it's just like, it's so brilliant. Like they're just like, you know, show this footage of a guy dressed as Batman. It's so tragic.
Yeah.
That's the one thing about this whole documentary is that like, it's not like as you know, maybe it sounds a bit funny and it is,
but the
overall thing is like, these people are leading like shockingly tragic lives. Like really, like it's really kind of, there's a real melancholy about this entire film.
Yeah.
It's beautifully shot. Really, really nice cinematography. And like Superman, the guy Superman is like, he's always wearing a suit. He's like, he gets married in a Superman suit. He proposes to his girlfriend at like a Superman convention. But so I definitely recommend picking this up. It's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like I thought it was going to be one of those, you know, breezy kind of like some student filmmaker wants to make a film. You know, I'll slap this together. But it's actually brilliant. One thing I want to say, and don't let this put you off, is that on the DVD it says Morgan Spurlock presents.
Yeah.
Morgan Spurlock of
Super Size Me and
Super Size Me.
World is
Osama bin Laden. How could you describe him? The fuckwit of the documentary,
absolutely
filmmaking. You know, I don't know how he's become as famous as he is. Yeah. But anyway, so in kind of in the vein of Tarantino sticking his name on things. Yeah.
He's just sort of helped release this.
He's helped release it, but it doesn't, because when I seen it, I was like, oh, Spurlock.
Yeah, no, when you handed it to me, I was like, Spurlock.
And even on the back, they try and kind of, in the little blurb, they kind of like twist it to where it sounds like it's actually a Spurlock film.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought, if I was the director, I'd be so annoyed.
Yeah.
And then one more thing is that like there's an intro by Morgan Spurlock in a superhero costume just being a dick. But if you can get over all that. If you can get past that, you can pick this up in HMV for $9.99. It's a no-brainer. It was better than Iron Man.
Awesome.
News.
Yeah.
News theme.
I don't know.
Hit me up.
I don't know much news. Batman. The sequel to The Dark Knight. Batman 3. It's coming out in 2012. Confirmed.
What's it called?
It doesn't have a name.
Oh, it doesn't have a name.
I just called it Batman 3. And Batman Forever 2. I don't know what you want to call it. It's coming out in 2012, which means 2012 is going to be the fucking summer of superhero movies. It's Captain America, Avengers, Batman, some other movie. There's going to be at least three. And also, speaking of the Avengers and Captain America, what's his name? Joss Whedon of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Serenity and Firefly and Dollhouse and Angel of Fame has been... I read a few weeks ago, it was confirmed that he was just signing, but I haven't seen anything that's actually said he's officially signed yet. But as far as I know, it's a done deal that he's going to be directing the Avengers movie and rewriting the Captain America movie as well as the Avengers movie, which is good because A, he writes a lot of comics... B, he writes a lot of TV and movies and directs TV movies, and he's pretty good. He's definitely good. He's a better writer and he's a director. But definitely, at least those movies sound like they're in capable hands now, which is something that was up in the air. It could have been another Ghost Rider. You know, I don't even know who directed Ghost Rider, but presumably someone really poor. So all is looking good for the Avengers. All the pieces are in place to make it good. Maybe they'll fuck it up, but hopefully they won't. Iron Man Extremis, the motion comic. This is out. I don't know, maybe this should have been the review thing, but I don't want to talk about it that much. Iron Man Extremis is a classic Iron Man story from 5-6 years ago, written by Warren Ellis and drawn by Adi Granov. And it's great. It's a 6-issue comic, and it's there's a reason it's a classic Iron Man story. It's because it's great. And now it's available in motion comic form on iTunes. I watched the first issue. Episode issue. That's weird. I don't know what you call a motion comic. Issue one of the motion comic. And it's pretty good. I'm not a huge fan of this retrofitting comics to motion comics that I think I've spoken about before. But it's a pretty decent one. And if you haven't read Extremis, and I don't know, you'd rather watch it in some sort of visuals way with voice acting, then this is the best way to do it. So I recommend checking that out. More interestingly, I should have mentioned this last month, but I forgot. The Marvel Comics iPhone application is now out, and it's pretty cool. It's clearly made for the iPad, obviously, where you can, which is almost as big as a comic book, so you can actually have full page comics, which would be awesome. But I don't have an iPad, I've got an iPhone. But it's pretty cool for about €2. But comics are €2 each, which is, I think, is a reasonable price considering they're like six in Forbidden Planet. Unfortunately, it's more older stuff, you're not getting stuff that came out this week. But the way it works on the iPhone screen is similar to PSP, where it'll zoom in on particular panels and you just sort of tap the next thing and it'll zoom across or zoom down. And so it's a. as far as reading comics on a very small screen go, this is a pretty good way to do it. And it's pretty cheap, like I said, it's pretty cheap. There's a load of free comics there, so you can download it yourself and see what it's like. I recommend downloading and seeing it. I'm never going to buy any comics on it. See, the thing is, €2 is cheap, but then if you're buying like a 7-issue arc of something, that's €14. And then you could just buy it on Amazon for €7, you know, and then you'd have a physical copy. But if you're the kind of guy that's on the move a lot and doesn't want to carry around lots of books, then maybe this would be your thing. I guess we need to start getting Irish comics on the iPhone. The first person to do that, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yes.
So tell me some Irish news, darling.
Gonna give you a rundown. There's quite a lot of events.
Okay.
Quite substantially big events happening. Gonna be happening in the Irish comic scene.
What, are we having another birthday bash?
We are. Yes. announced. But we'll not go that. Into that. So the first thing I guess is that Summer Edition, which is kind of the artist book comic and zine fair that is organised by Katie Blackwood, Paddy Lynch, and Philip Barrett. That is back this year.
I think we should come up with a nickname for the three of them. I like the Three Musketeers, but not the Three Musketeers. Something else. The trio. We'll work on it.
Yeah, we'll get back to
some of those witties, the Eclectic Dicks.
So that's going to be happening in Film Base again on Saturday, the 24th of July.
Okay.
We didn't get to make it last year. We're going to be there this year.
Definitely.
Seeing the photos from last year, it looked great.
Yeah,
absolutely. Everyone in the comics zine type, people are all there. So Saturday 24th.
We'll remind you of that July.
The next thing that's happening that we've mentioned this before is the Point Village Market comics event. This new market is opening up beside the O2, and they're going to have a big market on, I think, every week.
Okay.
But on this particular day, they are going to have quite a lot of comics tables.
Yeah. What day is that?
It's the 12th of June.
So it's coming up soon.
Yeah, it's coming up soon. So Hilary Lawler from Longstone Comics is kind of organizing a lot of this, trying to get a lot of different stuff on. I mean, they were talking about trying to get an exhibition. I think someone might be making a documentary, stuff like that. But what is definitely happening is there will be lots of
trade of comics.
Comic stalls. people flogging their wares.
Yeah.
Again, we'll link it all up. So that's coming up quite soon. Then also, this is probably... I have something else here.
Okay.
We got an email from a guy called Gareth Cummins, who's a promoter, a club promoter, and he's running a new club night. I gotta feel like a local radio station.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah.
He's running a club night once a month in the Village on Wexford Street.
Yeah.
It's called Rumbles from the Crypt. The first one is on May 9th.
Yeah.
They're going to have like a band and a few DJs playing from 9 to late. But the theme of the night is retro comics.
Okay.
And they hope to have some comic art displayed in the venue, as well as old Marvel DC cartoons being shown on, plasma screens and projectors.
Yeah.
So, if you're a comics person, that sounds great. It's free entry.
Yeah.
So you can't go wrong if you're a comics fan there. And the big one is the 2D Festival in Derry.
Yes. tell me about it.
Of course, I think this is maybe its third year. I may be wrong. I think it's its third year. Basically, it's a big comics festival that happens in Derry. It's organised by David Campbell, who we were going to have on the show today, but he's having a baby.
Yeah, so
what can you do?
He's got his priorities mixed up.
Yeah, we were kind of hoping to have him on the phone with, hearing a baby crying in the background and stuff. It's
like, give me a minute.
But, it's happening in June. It's Thursday the 3rd, Friday the 4th, and Saturday the 5th. It's a three-day festival even. And on Thursday and Friday during the daytime, there's going to be workshops on. Then on Friday night and Saturday evenings, there's going to be a lot of panel discussions. And then on Saturday the 5th, there's going to be kind of like a comics free-for-all, an open day, just on everything.
Okay,
cool. Loads of stuff happening. They've actually got some amazing guests. I'll give you a quick rundown of the people they have. Rufus Dayglow. He's like a comics artist from London who works on 2000 AD. 2000 AD. I'm sorry, I've been drinking lemon and honey all day. It's going to my head. But he's now working on the new Tank Girl projects. Then there's also Gary Leach, Jamie McKelvey. who's done the 6-issue series from Image Comics called Phonogram.
Okay, yeah. Not familiar with it.
Okay. There's also like a, I don't know if you've heard of this guy, Kieron Gillen. He's kind of like a computer game and music and comic book kind of journalist.
Okay. Not familiar with him, I'm going to be honest. Okay, his name sounds like the chick from Doctor Who.
Okay, excellent. One guy, actually, I don't know if you remember a comic I reviewed a while back from a Vertigo series even, called Army at Love.
Yes.
Well, Gary Ernskine, I think he's from Scotland, who did that book, is going to be over there. There's actually loads of people. And then there's going to be some Irish comics folk as well. Maeve Clancy, Philip Barrett will be there.
All the favourites.
Davy Francis, who was a cartoonist from Belfast, who's been doing loads of stuff for years. So it's actually going to be really great.
That sounds awesome.
Every year... people, well, of the past 2 years anyway, people have been telling us how awesome it is. And also they have this kind of new printing press thing they're doing that we've kind of talked a bit before in our last show with Maeve Clancy, where they're kind of, having an actual printing press to try and get some Irish comics, properly kind of printed and bound and sold and whatever. Yeah. So we will be talking to organizer David Campbell before it happens.
Yeah.
But just to let you know it's on in case you need to book dates
off,
etc. one more thing. Cine Magic Dublin.
Yeah.
This is happening very soon. In fact, what day is the podcast going out?
It's going to be like the 4th of May.
Oh, yeah. So actually, so this week, starting on the 5th to the 12th, this is an ongoing kind of yearly thing, Cine Magic Dublin, which is kind of like this is the third actual international film and television festival for young people. So any of you young people listening. but they do actually brilliant stuff. Like for example, there's going to be a brief history on the Irish animation industry. And they're going to screen All Dogs Go to Heaven.
Sweet.
And The Secret of Kells.
awesome.
And they're going to have a discussion about it and stuff. And there's loads of stuff. They're screening everything. Like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, The Secret of Nymph. A lot of Don Bluth stuff.
Cool.
But there's absolutely bucket loads of stuff happening. You don't necessarily have to be a kid. It probably helps. But you can still get in.
Yeah, just wear shorts and a t-shirt and a baseball cap. Try and make yourself look a bit smaller.
You get all the details on cinemagic.ie. As with all our new stories, we'll link them all up.
Yeah,
our website. Yeah, so you know, just in case you're like too lazy to listen to what we're saying, and then type it in Google.
No need to insult our our listeners. And so we've arrived speedily at the end of our show.
What a show!
It was. It was delightful. I don't have any post-show note thoughts. Do you have anything you want to share with the audience?
Well, just briefly, I just want to mention, because it's been in the news.
Jerry Ryan's dead. No?
Sorry, I was just guessing. I was going to mention about Tintin. another heartbreaking story.
heartbreaking, equal measures there.
Well, you may have seen in the news that this week, a man has basically challenged... he basically wants the Tintin book, Tintin in the Congo, banned.
Yeah.
This debate has been going on for quite a while.
Yeah.
I mean, long story short, there is a lot of kind of like racist bits in it, and there's a lot of cruelty to animals.
Yeah.
In it, which in later volumes, in some of the later volumes, has been edited out.
Right.
But pretty much, you can pick up this book.
Yeah.
Like anywhere, but it has it's wrapped and it has a thing saying, that bits of this book are racist.
Yeah.
And in fact, the only thing that this story or this, story coming out has done has pushed sales of this book up like tenfold. It's like number 5 in Amazon's, top, five buying books thing.
Yeah.
If the courts decide that they're going to ban this, it'll just be banned in Belgium. Okay. So it won't really affect anything. But
what's your thoughts on it?
I have a copy of it. I actually can't find it at the minute. I was looking for it, but my thoughts, like many of the people who bought it when they heard about it this week, was that just kind of out of interest, you kind of just wanted to read it, because it was a popular kind of character, doing things, that you wouldn't normally, you know, yeah. saying things that you wouldn't kind of normally, you know, see,
yeah.
Et cetera,
Give me some examples of what goes on. I mean, it's, I literally don't know what sort of racist about it.
I should say that the book came out like in 19, kind of, it was in the 30s, I'm not sure exactly what year, and... The author had subsequently, you know, said in interviews that at the time, you know, he would have been just under pressure, or he just, not under pressure, but he just would have gone with the general feeling at the time in the area that he was in the office that he was in of the newspaper where he used to write Tintin. So it was just kind of like racist, just general kind of racist remarks that are going on. Then there's the infamous scene of. Him putting a stick of dynamite in the back of a rhinoceros, drilling a hole in the back of a rhinoceros, putting a stick of dynamite in him and blowing him to shit.
Awesome.
I remember reading that and just going, holy shit, that's like one of the most extreme animal killings by a mainstream friendly character. Yeah. But I think that particular scene is actually edited out in a lot of the books you pick up now. The rhino just runs away.
He takes out the dynamite, the driver just goes, oh, yeah, see you later.
But I think just, I don't want to go on about it, but I think it is just more or less like kind of like a historical curiosity.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I'm not sure if it, I think as long as, I don't know. I feel like it's wrapped now, it comes with a warning saying it's racist. I don't think people are promoting, know, Tintin as a character we should all... you know, look up to and do as he does anymore, or at least. So I don't see the problem with it being available as long as it's clear.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean?
Well, I kind of, what I was thinking was, you know, like they still sell copies of Mein Kampf.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And people buy, you know, people buy Mein Kampf not to fucking read it for its, you know, ideology. You read it just because it's interesting from a historical point of view to see what they're writing at the time. So from that point of view, I don't see why it should be bad.
The other thing is the problem is that, well, I would consider I'm a child and I find, oh, I like Tintin, and I go down to the shop and in the Tintin section is Tintin in the Congo with no sort of, you know, that I can just pick this up or that a small child might accidentally. So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the problem, but clearly that's been solved.
It has been solved. They are wrapped, and I think in some, if not all, bookstores, they actually keep that Tintin book in... They don't put it in the children's section. You know what I mean?
I don't see.
Yeah. So we'll see. If you keep an eye on the news, you'll see if it's banned in Belgium this week.
But if you're really worried about being banned elsewhere, you might want to pick up a copy. You can easily find it by going to books on Amazon and going to the top 10 list on the right-hand side.
I mean, people have tried to get it banned before. This is, you know, this has come out quite... Because obviously, you know, it was in the 1930s. So several people have tried to get it banned before. It's never come to fruition. So. Yeah. I don't know.
That's interesting.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So join us next time.
Yeah.
When we will have another.
Oh, we're gonna have an interview.
Tremendous interview.
Oh, actually, I'm really excited about the one that's coming up in 2 weeks. I cannot wait.
Oh yeah.
I hope I get to attend.
Why? Who are you talking to?
I don't know.
Okay.
I was pretending we had someone exciting lined up. Now, well, we might do. we don't have them lined up yet, but I'm excited. I'm excited to see who we get.
Yes, it should be good.
Starts in 2 weeks. To play out, we'll have another song by Craig. Or we could just ignore this all Imro thing and put on some decent music. Yeah, let's do that. All right, see you.
Who took the bomb?